I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. So Webb Simpson is your 2018 Players' Champion. Tiger Woods, though, was very, very good. And we have some exciting Irish Open news. We are here with thanks as well to the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, which we're all looking forward to this year. And now Nathan Murphy, very much looking forward to next year. I know all Irish Open courses are amazing. And
they're all great.
They're all equal. In my opinion, some are more equal than others. And when I heard Paul McGinley do an interview with you this morning to reveal where we're going in 2019, I thought, brilliant choice. Fantastic.
Lange.
Yeah.
What a town. Golf course is great. It'll be a proper old test for players ahead of Portrush 2 weeks later. But Lange as a town is. Lange is a sort of Portrush, Port Stewart type vibe off it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
The fifth hole is the sort of signature. Par three. Blind. There can't be too many blind par threes.
No.
There's a lot of trust you need there.
Yeah, and your caddy. You're waiting for that crowd to cheer. You think you hit a good shot, the crowd don't cheer. You look at your caddy.
It'd be good to get Bubba over. We do talk about Bubba and maybe his lack of links, love of links golf.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's brilliant.
Mm. I think it's a great choice.
It's been universally welcomed already.
And McGinley, and we'll play the interview you recorded with him this morning, made the point that he really did want it on a links course. Like if you're coming to Ireland, this is one of our, I don't want to say unique selling point because we're not quite unique, but you think of Irish golf and at its best, it's links golf. As great as Adair and everything is in a different way, it's links golf.
I still don't think I've got my head around the fact that the Open is going to be on this island next year.
Yeah.
It sort of felt like Portrush was this thing that was never going to happen. And then when it was announced, 2019, God knows where I'll be in the world by 2019. And now actually.
And here we are still stuck.
Here we are, still talking the same amount of shite. But once again, I wouldn't even be working in this business. I'll have a proper job.
Yeah, we're waiting for Godot or something.
Maybe, McGinley was talking about he's going to take a hands-on role for Lahinch, you know, in terms of the broadcast, even down to the broadcast coverage. He doesn't do these things by half. Mm. So he'll make sure that Golf Channel are getting the best shots. Have you been up to the Cliffs of Moher? Have you got that shot of the Cliffs of Moher? I thought he was going to go, I'm going to bring in some fresh new voices. And I've got just the guys. That never happened.
Interesting.
So there was an awkward silence.
So we'll bring that interview with McGinley. What time? It was early this morning.
It was, 9:30.
Oh, God.
People give out about this podcast. I was here till 11 o'clock last night. I came in specially for Paul McGinley.
Did you? Fair play. Good man. So.
You did that thing where at 10:30, you responded and go, oh, sorry, don't think I can make that. even though I'd WhatsApped you at 2:00 yesterday afternoon, you waited till after the interview was done to get back to me and go, yeah, no, I don't think that's going to work for me. Such an asshole.
There were extenuating circumstances. I was with the Rugby People of Ireland yesterday.
Oh, you're real supporters. You're a rugby man now. You've turned your back on the golfing fraternity.
The Rugby Players Ireland Awards, the Zurich Irish Rugby Awards. Brian O'Driscoll inducted into the Hall of Fame. Players Player of the Year, Keith Earls. Young Players Player of the Year, Jacob Stockdale.
Did you even know that these awards existed this time last year?
Yeah. This is the first time they'll be on television though, actually. TV3 this Friday night.
Mm.
They're going out.
They've gone all in.
All in. TV3. Tuxedo on, everything. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was good.
The rugby fraternity is a good one to be in, even in terms of golf. They like their golf.
They all love their golf.
And they're members of all the best courses.
Yeah. So, that's where I was.
Any friends in the pod there?
Yeah, a few. A few friends of the pod there. Yeah.
Any famous friends of the pod?
None that I know of.
That's upsetting.
No. All you care about is famous people.
I'm just wondering if, like, a few of the Irish international rugby players would listen to the pod. It would be nice.
And I would think they've better things.
A confidence boost on this.
Better things to be doing.
Thursday afternoon.
Before we get to McGinley, and then we'll talk about the players afterwards, because I know McGinley had some thoughts on Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. Your tweets to @GolfWeeklyOTB. Tyke Hegarty is trying to figure out which is bigger news today, the Irish Open going to Lahinch, or the fact that there'll actually be a pod today, and it's living up to his weekly name. Fran Henry, this is on our discussion last week. Is my voice very hoarse? I feel like
it's got a nice gravelly tone to it, Joe. Okay. You should stick with this.
Fran Henry, if there is to be a fifth major, surely it should be outside of the US. Yeah, that's what we were agreed on yesterday, I think. Fergal O'Shea is just back. Nice picture. Just back from a weekend in Quinta do Lago. Have you played golf there? Top quality courses, says Fergal, and surprisingly good value.
I'm fairly sure Quinta do Lago is the sort of place that our overall boss, you know, should really bring his golf podcast, considering he owns it.
Of course, yeah, that's his place. John, we were talking about speeding up golf last week. I was talking about maybe just get them carts to go from tee to ball.
Yeah, great idea, Joe.
You don't think it's a good idea? And you can have cameras in the carts.
Oh, mic them up in the carts.
That's what I'm saying. All the carts are mic'd.
Sort of cart pool karaoke.
Yeah. And maybe you do play a bit of music at times and they won't be able but to dance to it. You've Tiger Woods bopping along to something. I think from a TV point of view, you would lose nothing. You get brilliant, get the brilliant, really good, high quality cameras in the cart. And
if you'd sold it like that, people might have got on board.
A lot of people called me very boring and said they wanted to be part of your golf club and not my golf club during the week.
Not really surprised.
Well, so John says, though, if you really want to speed up golf, give them a rangefinder and get rid of those green reading books. Read your own bloody greens. God, giving them a rangefinder, they'd be all day. Can you imagine Jason Day with a rangefinder? Check it about 15 times.
I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, no. I don't know, John. I think they'd take as long with a rangefinder. Half the time, the yardage isn't the issue. No. They're talking about the wind. They're talking about various other things that we're not good enough to even be aware of.
Do you even think all those factors are the issue? Do you not think maybe Jason Day is just in some sort of mental state of mind that he's looking for 8 different excuses to just delay things, just to get himself set? So while they're having the conversation about the wind, and obviously there's a certain degree of importance to it, he's just sort of biding his time. He's just getting his heart rate down a little bit, and he's probably only half listening. He knows exactly what shot he's going to hit.
Yeah, I would think so, and probably just has some swing thoughts or technique thoughts he wants to get in his head. Lots of people reading the Tiger book, again at Fionn's insistence, because he's not here and he did speed read
the book. He's playing golf in Scottsdale this week.
Is he?
Yes.
Bloody hell, I can't keep up with him.
At some unbelievable golf club, whose name I have forgot.
Right.
But he's on some sort of press junket, the usual.
Naturally.
The usual. And I think he said, yeah, if I could review a bit of golf while I was over there, that'd be great. And they turned up with the Scottsdale equivalent of Portmarnock.
Right. Delighted for him.
Always.
Christian McCourt, though, is reading the book. Have you read it yet?
No, I am, as is my way with two children, about 15 pages in.
Okay.
But now that I know we're going to be doing it next week,
we definitely
will speed read it.
Because actually a few friends of the pod at the awards last night were reading the Tiger's book. This is one of... Oh, we have the author on the show next Tuesday. So we'll play that out in Golf Weekly and see what he has to say. I'm not sure legally what he can say. This is what I was trying to check. If I have the...
I'd say do it live.
Because the libel laws are different. I don't want Steinberg to be just waiting for the chance to sue the first people outside the US who actually reveal some of the stuff in the book.
And I haven't
seen... Justin Timberlake did that recently. He sued the English version of Heat magazine over stories that he couldn't sue in the US for. We have much stricter libel laws, as people I'm sure know.
And he was doing that just to prove a point.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that he was going to make millions out of this. It was, I'm just setting out a marker here.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing your research ahead of it as to what people have already said. I haven't even seen a huge amount of comments online from British journalists.
No. There's been no review of that book in English newspapers.
Mm.
And there's juicy stuff in that book. Now, Earl Woods, we can go to town. Earl Woods, we can go to town on.
Oh, the dead can't sue you.
The dead can't sue you. Steinberg and Tiger. It was even interesting learning a bit about Steinberg. We'll touch on it next week. You know, I didn't know how this guy...
How did he?
...came about. Well, in short, Tiger, when he first joined IMG, had a slightly older agent. And this agent, I mean, was saying yes to everything. Tiger was raking the money in, but he was doing a lot of corporate days, a lot of small-time stuff, a lot of sponsorship stuff. And I think Tiger's getting a bit fed up with it. And he may have been a bit unsure about IMG, or maybe the guy retired. And so they
and all the money he just made off Tiger Woods.
Probably. And they had to find a new guy. And I think IMG said, well, Tiger, meet a few different of our up-and-coming young executives, one of whom was Steinberg. And they met for a coffee or a lunch. And Steinberg basically just told him, I will say no to everything for you. I will become your Mr. No Man. I will shoot down all interviews. I will just give you your life back. Tiger was like, done. Felt he genuinely cared for him. And so Steinberg has the reputation for saying no, 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 no to everything.
I'm always intrigued about that sort of relationship between player and agent when it gets to that level. So you would assume Steinberg needs Tiger. But where does it flip? Mm. That Steinberg knows so much that actually he now calls the shots.
Well, I wonder. There was certainly a good degree of Steinberg ringing, you know, Steve Williams and saying, yeah, there's going to be a story about a girl in the paper tomorrow. It's not true. Don't worry about it. You know, he's trying to put out fires.
Press officer.
Yeah, all things to him. Anyway, Christian McCourt, Tiger's relationship with Mark O'Meara is the most exhilarating part of the book. O'Meara, the overly infatuated girlfriend, and Tiger, the distant boyfriend. Will it ever work out for Mark? For Mark O'Meara. I got the impression from the book O'Meara was a bit hurt. It's like, O'Meara was a great friend to him. Stayed at his house at Augusta.
That went well.
Yeah. Over at the house all the time in Florida. Practiced together. Linked him up with Haney.
The father he never had.
Well, now. I'm not sure which... It's St. Andrews. It's a British Open week. Mark O'Meara is being inducted into the Golf Hall of Fame.
So probably 05.
I think it is at St. Andrews. It's a huge deal for O'Meara. You know, he's surpassed all expectations in his career. And a lot of the pros who are playing that week, like this is the Tuesday before the tournament or Monday. Certainly not. It's not the Wednesday night. And a lot of pros come. He's a popular guy. Tiger doesn't show up.
What?
You know what I'm saying? This guy is just selfish to a ferociously awful point.
And do you get the sense from reading the book that Tiger doesn't show up because it's just Tiger and he's been so self-obsessed for his entire life he doesn't realise he should show up? Or is Tiger not showing up because he thinks O'Meara would expect me to be there, people expect me to be there, I need to be this guy, I need to make this speech? Mm. No, I'm not going to do that. I don't know Mark O'Meara or anything.
It's a good question, I don't really know. It's hard to work out why someone wouldn't do that in that situation. He's literally in the town. This guy's been such a good friend to you. Show up for an hour.
So does Tiger, and the more stories you get, the more I'm looking forward to properly getting into it. Does Tiger care what anyone thinks about him?
No, not in the slightest. No, that's what's overwhelmingly clear.
Because I would have thought, again, it's such an easy PR win. You turn up, all the greats of golf are there, Watson is there, Nicklaus is there, and you say some lovely things about Mark O'Meara, and everyone goes, Tiger, one of the custodians of the game.
Yeah. Now, I can't speak present tense. It was very noticeable to the players that he spent time signing autographs. Mm. Like, I don't remember ever seeing that before. He was there with the fans doing the whole Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson thing, and smiling, and then someone came up to him and he gave her a big hug. So... I'm willing to accept this change.
I'd say that won't last long. Think how much Tiger's autograph is worth.
Well, he was signing for the kids. It was really nice, you know. I want to like him. And I was still hoping he would win on Sunday. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Luke, is Tiger or Webb Simpson?
Luke Batchy. Much preferred the carry on these hard courses in Portugal. Friend of the pod. Beautiful picture of very hard ground in Portugal with that ball runs. And then Woodsy says... Well, this was during the tournament on Sunday. If Webb Simpson wasn't on that leaderboard, lads, how great would this final round be? Yeah, it would have been great. We'll talk about the players in due course, but Nathan Murphy got out of his bed at an astonishingly early hour this morning to interview Paul McGinley with some exciting news about the Irish Open, and they chat a bit about the players as well. So enjoy. Here is the great Nathan Murphy with Paul McGinley.
So the news is out. It's been confirmed today that the 2019 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open will take place at Lahinch Golf Club in County Clare on the west coast of Ireland. For the last 4 years, the Irish Open has got to a whole new level with the support of Rory McIlroy and the Rory Foundation. We're now entering another phase where I think it's meant to stand on its own 2 feet, and we're going to see some Irish sporting greats and Irish golfing greats take hold of the tournament over the coming years. And first up is Paul McGinley, and I'm delighted to say he's on the line now. Afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Nathan.
So you are tournament host for the 2019 Irish Open. The news is finally out there. You're heading to Lahinch. How pleased are you with this?
Very pleased. I mean, it was my preferred choice. I'm delighted that the European Tour Dubai Duty Free have concurred that it's a good venue. I think with the Open in Portrush next year, I think it was important that we kind of separated in terms of the size of the country away from the upper part of the country where most people will be going to the open up a new market down there in the southwest of Ireland on an iconic golf course. And obviously a Lynx golf course was of paramount importance, particularly next year with the Open being in Portrush.
So the plan as of now is that it will hold a spot in the calendar. It'll be 2 weeks before the Open Import Rush, which is arguably going to be the biggest sporting event that has ever taken place on this island. When you look at the two courses, and for people that aren't familiar with them, how good a preparation will Lahinch be for the players that are heading on to the Open?
Well, that's kind of my job, Nathan. You know, I mean, like I did in the Ryder Cup when Wales was the week before the Ryder Cup when I was captain, I made sure that Wales was set up identically in terms of rough heights, fairway widths, green speeds, so that the players could come and kind of experience firsthand the similar setup to what was going to be the same, going to be the case in Gleneagles, and that's what I plan on doing next week or two. I'll work with the RNA, I really spoke to them about getting insights as to their fairway widths on par fives, fairway widths on par fours, obviously green speeds, and obviously rough heights as well too. And then we'll kind of try to taper and set the golf course up in a similar vein so that the players will have a really good preparation for the Open. But let's not lose sight either that, you know, we're talking about well over €1 million first prize. The Irish Open is now a huge money event and very important, big part of the Rolex series. So it's got to stand on its own as well. But I'm also aware of a lot of the players will be coming over and using this preparation for a major championship, which is on 2 weeks later.
You do have big shoes to fill. Rory has taken this tournament to a whole new level in terms of prize money and in terms of the exposure it's getting around the world. And you've spoken before how, listen, you don't have maybe Rory's ability to ring certain players and to call in those type of favours, which I think even Rory has sort of curtailed over the last couple of years. But is that what you're looking at, that you can actually go to the best players around the world and say, this is as close a challenge as you're going to get to an Open Championship, that this will be the most ideal preparation you could ever have heading into Portrush?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I mean, you know, I don't want to call in favors. I want the players to come on their own, on their own instinct and say, yeah, you know what, just like Roger Federer goes and plays on grass courts before he goes to play Wimbledon and, on hard courts before he goes to play US Open. You know, I think golfers should be the same. And I think look at the performers and who played well in recent years, particularly on links golf courses at the Open Championship. They've normally played either the Scottish or Irish Open. So I want to continue that vein, and I want to, you know, say to the guys, if you really want good preparation, Irish Open is going to provide that, and that's why I'm very keen to work closely with the RNA and make sure that I'm aligned up as close as I can. And if the guys then want to have a week off, they can stay in Ireland, they can practice. We can organise that for them, or they may choose to go and play in Scotland the week after and have 3 weeks in a row in links courses. Because it's a very different form of golf, Nathan, as you know. It's a very, very different form of golf. And, you know, golf in some ways is very generic throughout the world, particularly in America. Same product, same weather conditions, same green speeds on a week-to-week basis. And the links golf course setup is very, very different. Everything from temperature to green speeds to fairways to grasses you play out of, and of course, the strong wind. So hopefully the players are going to see it that way too, and we're going to get lots of support.
From your conversations when you're out on the PGA Tour and when you're talking to American players, what's their attitude then towards links golf? Because it's so rare that they do get to play it. Do they look at it as a necessary evil? We'll go across, we'll play that 1 week of the Open Championship. Or do most of them actually relish the challenge? Do they look around at the Scottish Open and the Irish Open and think, let's make the most of this 2-3 week spell?
Well, it's interesting. That's a really good question. You know, the guys who don't really perform well in the Open are the guys who don't like it. You know, Bubba Watson's a good example. I mean, there's a guy, if anybody who God made to be a great links golfer with the way he shapes the ball, it's him. It's the way he plays the game. You know, be able to shape the ball as much as he does, you know, control the trajectory the way he does, the creativity around the greens that he does. It's no coincidence that he plays well on golf courses where there's lots of shape on the greens, and he can use that kind of shape to maneuver the ball in, you know, Augusta National being one towards the flag. So, but at the same stage, just Bubba Watson's not one of those guys who's embraced the Open Championship, embraced the weather conditions, embraced the wind. And hopefully, you know, one day he's going to do that, because there's nobody more excited than watching the game and how he plays the game than Bubba Watson. So I think a lot of it is attitude. You know, Tiger Woods, from the very first day he turned professional, always talked about the Open Championship and weather conditions. And it's no coincidence that he's got a stellar record in the Open, because from day one he saw it that way. Tom Watson, going back further, initially he hated links golf and thought it was so unfair. And then, of course, he grew up to love it and won all those Open Championships. So I think a lot of it is attitude. You know, if you want to be a major winner and you want to compete in links golf course, you've got to embrace all the conditions and the ground conditions as much as the conditions in the air with the wind.
How important a golf course has Lahinch been in your career when you look back on your win in the south of Ireland, turning professional shortly afterwards, winning the south of Ireland at that course at that time. Was that a pivotal moment when you look back in your life?
Oh yeah, hugely so. I mean, I didn't know I was going to turn professional when I turned up there in July. I was outside the Walker Cup team. I was hoping to have a good summer, make the Walker Cup team. I finished my college in America. I was a good player. I wasn't a great player, certainly by college standards in America. I wasn't an All-American or anything like that. But I kind of set myself a goal. If I didn't make the Walker Cup team, I wouldn't even go to the tour school. And it was different back then, because when you went to the tour school, that was a big leap of faith. You couldn't just turn professional, you know, for the 1 week and then go back if it didn't work out. You had to kind of do it for 2 or 3 years. So it was a big jump for me to do it. Winning the South of Ireland was huge. Because that kind of put me on the Walker Cup team, and you know, from Walker Cup team, I went to the tour school, came second, and I was up and running. So the South of Ireland was really important to me. It holds a close place in my heart. I'm delighted it's going down there. I think it's a great town, great golf course, a golf course that's evolved and got better over the years. And you know, ironically, you know, the five of us are going to do the rotation you mentioned earlier. Rory's the only one, I think, who hasn't won the South of Ireland. So there's not many tournaments we can say that we've got one up on him on.
Yeah, it's got such a stellar history. So many of the Irish Close Championships do. And when you look at how Irish players have gone on to blossom, a lot of it seems to go back to what you learned in the real cutthroat atmosphere of Irish amateur golf. Is that still there? We do talk about the lack of Irish players emerging on the European Tour. Or is it just how world golf has changed? Is it still as cutthroat? Are we still giving our golfers as many learnings from those amateur tournaments in this country?
I wish I had more time to talk to you about it, Nathan. I think it's a miss that we've got at the moment in amateur golf. You know, the Golfing Union of Ireland do a brilliant job. I mean, if you look at all the guys who have come through in recent years, you know, Padraig, Shane, Darren, me, you know, we all, and Rory, we all dominated the Irish amateur scene in our last years. And what I mean dominated Scratch Cups, dominated these championships. We weren't winning them, we were getting to finals and semi-finals. It was a great breeding ground. It bred you how to win. It bred you about instinct and about what it needed to take to win, not just go and compete and finish seventh or eighth and, oh, that was a good week in the, you know, whatever open it was around the world, and you get a lot of world ranking points. So I'd like to see certainly more, and I know the GUI have helped this year. We're giving more world ranking points and more of a focus back towards the major championships that we have in the amateur scene in Ireland and the Irish Championship, because it certainly was huge for us. And I just feel that a lot of the guys have lost their way in the last few years by trying to chase world ranking points in the amateur game. And now, leave the world ranking. I don't think the amateur world ranking points have been a great addition to the amateur game, because fellas are playing for the world ranking position just like they are on the main tour. You know, you see guys chasing world ranking points, playing a minimum number of events so their visory number is small, and trying to keep the world ranking position high so they get into all the major events. And if they have a high world ranking position, they get paid more by their sponsors and stuff like that. And that, for me, shouldn't be the focus. And I've seen a little bit of that creeping into the amateur game, which I don't like to see, because amateur game should be about having fun, should be about playing as often and as much as you can, particularly in your home country, because those courses where we have the championships in Ireland are all on the links golf courses. Then we had some super scratch cups, you know, Mullingar, Carlow, 72-hole scratch cups that were great breeding grounds. I mean, Padraig's talked a lot about this as well, and we're all aligned with this, that certainly stood us in good stead. And it's a shame that over the last few years that hasn't seemed to be the way, as the amateurs have kind of travelled around the world a lot more.
Yeah, when we have a bit more time, we might get into it in a bit more detail, Paul. You're back in this neck of the woods then for a couple of weeks. Big tournament at Wentworth next week, the flagship event of the European Tour with the BMW PGA Championship. But having been over in America, and I know as well you were down in Adair Manor, you've got to spend some time and talk with Rory McIlroy, because the last time we spoke to you was the day after the Masters, when we were all wondering what the hell happened to Rory and why it never really worked for him. And I think your feeling at the time was that it wasn't pressure, that maybe he just ran out of gas with everything that had happened on the Saturday night. Having spent a bit of time with him, have you a bit more of an insight into what happened on the final day at Augusta?
Yeah, I think certainly the energy levels were one thing. You know, managing our energy levels is a very important thing. And the expectation on Rory, and the commitments that he gives, particularly in the media, and how open he is in the media, drains a lot of energy from him. It's one of the endearing things about him, but there's also a cost you pay for that. So I think that was part of it. I think, you know, he was chasing down. I don't think he gave enough credit or realized how good a competitor Patrick Reed was. And, you know, the positioning really going into that last round was, yeah, you know, I've got a chance here to win a to win the Grand Slam, but I'm chasing a formidable competitor, a guy who took me down in the Ryder Cup in 2016 when I'd give it my best shot. A guy that's got a 3-shot lead on me. That's a huge lead, and a lot of guys in the rearview mirror. So I think it was a tough challenge that he faced. I don't know if he was properly prepared for it. I mean, only he can answer that. But what we saw in Rory was, you know, he unraveled very quickly, and that's what made me think, you know, where was his energy level? Because when you're playing and you're competing, if you have an extra gear to go into, that's when you're at your best. And it didn't seem like he had that extra gear to go into. When he missed a short putt in the second, as we all saw, it kind of unraveled very quickly. His confidence dissipated very quickly, and that was kind of the worry. That was the kind of worry of what happened there, because, you know, you wouldn't consider him a guy who falls under pressure. You know, he's won so many tournaments around the world, and I saw a statistic last year when he passed his 29th birthday last week, that only Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus have won more tournaments at that age than anybody in the history of the game. So sometimes we're very hard on Rory, and we lose perspective of how well he's actually done. I know it's been a few years since he's won a major championship, but he's certainly keen on doing it again. And one of the reasons why we're taking over the hosting of this Irish Open is that he's trying to clear up his diary in so many ways in order to focus really on his golf. And, you know, that includes when he gets to weeks of major championships, to take as little out of himself as possible and leave it all on the golf course.
It hasn't really clicked from since the Masters either, culminating in that miscut at the Players' Championship at the weekend. Is this a different type of challenge he now faces mentally? Because he had that 3-4 month build-up to Augusta where he sort of took a stock take on his life and tested everything and came back, he felt, at the peak of his power, showed that at Bay Hill. And then when that doesn't happen and you can't seal the deal, suddenly you wonder, well, did I do everything right? Do you look at him now and think, actually, there's maybe some question marks about where he's heading over the coming months, and that maybe he's questioning himself if he's done everything right over the last 6 months?
Well, I think he's on track, Nathan, to be quite honest. I think, but the Masters was a body blow. There's no doubt about that. It was a body blow. I think everybody can see that. He'd be the first to admit that. You know, he's going for the Grand Slam. Only 5 people in the history of game have ever achieved that. He's still only 29 years of age. He sees that, and you know, that's where he probably preempted his statement a couple of weeks ago, where the Masters is the biggest tournament, and it is. And it is, because he hasn't got the Grand Slam yet, and it's the one thing that he's missing. I think he's on track. The important thing is now to bounce back. TPC last week was not Rory's golf course. I mean, if ever you wanted to illustrate a golf course, you know, my belief has always been horses for courses in professional game. If you ever wanted, you know, where were all the big hitters last week? You know, why did the shortest hitter in the field, the guy who finished last in driving distance, but number one in driving accuracy, win the tournament? Because it's horses for courses. And that was a golf course that doesn't really suit Rory. He's got a decent record on it, but not a very strong record. Wentworth, that he's playing next week, I know he's won there in the past, but again, it doesn't play into his natural instinct, which is long straight driving. There's not a lot of corners and dogleg that he can take over. It's very tight. So again, I mean, I know he's there. He has won in the past in Wentworth last week, but again, it's not a golf course that suits him. The next one is the US Open. You know, he probably played Jack Nicklaus Memorial. That is a golf course that will suit him, and, you know, expect him to see playing well on that one. But one of the things that, you know, he has to add to his armory is this ability to play golf courses that don't particularly suit him. You know, and that ability to be patient. We all know how great he is when he's on the front foot and he's flying around somewhere like Quail Hollow and shooting 63 and, you know, bringing golf course to his knees that's a million miles long. But one of the things I certainly would love to see is that ability, like Tiger Woods did in Hoylake, to kind of tone it down a little bit and still play that patient golf and play irons off the tee and good course management and control a golf tournament, even though, you know, it doesn't particularly suit you. And, you know, I think that's there's excitement in doing that. You know, it's like I watched Atletico Madrid last night. You know, the way they play football, okay, you can score a goal, but man, when they scored that first goal, it was game over. They know how to shut up shop better than anybody. So I think sometimes we get lost in golf in terms of, you know, how great these players are in the front foot, but playing on the back foot should be a skill and something we all should kind of admire as well too. And I think that's something that Rory has to add to his game. We all know how good he is when he's on the front foot.
Is it something you sense he's very aware of?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do. You know, he's a great historian of the game. He knows all the great tournaments, how to play. I mean, Shinnecock now in a few weeks' time, that's going to be a different story. You know, last year we played Erin Hills, 7,800 yards long. No surprise Brooks Koepka won the tournament. I mean, if ever there was a golf course made for Brooks Koepka, that was it. Unfortunately, Rory's coming back from injury last year. That would have really suited him as well too, but he was just on the back of just one of his first tournaments back after a long spell out with injury. He wasn't ready. Shinnecock's a different story. It's going to be a lot of irons off the tee. There's going to be a bit of wind. There's small greens. It's a links-style golf course right beside the ocean. So, again, I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to adapt to that challenge. And as I say, there's excitement in that challenge as well. Okay, he can take off the head cover and belt driver down every hole, but, you know, there's a huge skill and a mindset involved in playing golf that don't particularly suit you.
You mentioned Tiger Woods, and it's remarkable when you look at the viewing figures from the Players' Championship last week, the jump over the past couple of years to last Sunday when Tiger, I'm going to say, is in contention, even though Webb Simpson never looked as though he was going to throw away that tournament, but Tiger was on the leaderboard. He was making a charge over the weekend. You were there at Sawgrass. What was your sense of where Tiger is now, 3-4 months into this comeback?
That was the best I've seen him, Nathan. You know, he got off to a slow start, but again, he dug it out. He didn't miss the cut. He dug it out. He made the cut on the mark. Okay, got a little bit lucky when Spieth and Thomas both bogeyed 18 in one of the last groups on Friday to make the cut. But the way he dug it out the last 3 or 4 holes, we followed him on TV that morning. He wasn't on his game, yet he still managed to play pars. He still managed to be conservative, miss it on the right side of the fairways. Control, I mean, that par 5 ninth hole, the last hole he played, he figured he was in the cut line. He obviously wasn't confident with his game. He blocked it up the rough on the right. He laid it up short. He pitched on to 20 feet, nice and conservative, rolled a putt down dead, tapped in. He knew what he was doing there. And then he caught fire at the weekend. But what was really interesting about him was when he dropped his shots, he dropped 3 shots, I think, in the last 6 holes on Sunday. Those who watched it, you know, from 13 in, every single shot he hit was down the flag. The only thing that was missing was his distance control wasn't quite in. Again, that's adrenaline. That's playing more competitive golf. That's getting the feeling when a ball comes off the club face a little bit quicker than you normally do because of adrenaline. Now, if anybody knows how to play adrenaline, it's Tiger Woods. And I think that just takes a little bit of adjusting again. But this was the first time that I really saw him when he got in the heat of competition, hitting it down the flag. You know, he wasn't afraid to take out the driver, and he was, and his iron shot looked raining right down on top of the flag from the 12th hole in. So I think that was a big, big move for Tiger last week, and I expect him now to get closer and closer to winning over the next few weeks.
That's pretty exciting as well, that he is flag hunting on that back nine, because in many ways, an 11th place finish for Tiger Woods doesn't matter. It's all or nothing at this stage of his career. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the world ranking points. He wants to win tournaments. And does that suggest he's going to take whatever risks are necessary on a back nine to force himself into contention?
Yeah, I mean, he was chasing there. You know, if he was leading the tournament by 2 or 3 shots, it would have been a different story. But you know, we saw him in Valspar play the 18th hole from second place position, needing a birdie to get in the playoff, and play it so negatively, hitting 2 iron off the tee and leaving himself nearly 200 yards to a really tough pin with no chance of making birdie. Now, that was an insight into his mind that he wasn't confident. I wasn't confident to take out the driver and hit a drive and a wedge like Patrick Reed did a couple of groups before him. Then we saw him in contention in Bay Hill, where he gets to the 16th hole on the back of a birdie run and hits a snap hook way out of bounds and takes himself out of contention there. They were different scenarios. This was a different scenario. Anybody who's watched it there, you know, birdies 12, 13 was down the flag, 14 was down the flag, 15 was down the flag, 16 was down the flag, 17 was down the flag, even though it was in the water, and 18 was a safe par. That was different. So I think being a competitor he is, it's about scoring. And I think he was starting to feel comfortable under pressure again there, being in the heat. So I expect him to, as I say, go on from here. That's going to give him a big boost that he pulled off the shots. Okay, the results weren't great and they didn't finish beside the pin, but he certainly was pulling off the shots down the stretch.
Just before we wrap up, Paul, one of the stories that came out of the game down at Adair Manor, where yourself and Rory took on Porter Carrington and Shane Lowry, was about the Ryder Cup and potentially going to Adair Manor. And Harrington has been asked whether he'd like to be captain if the Ryder Cup was to come back to Ireland in 2026. And typical Podrick was very honest and said, well, actually, I might be a bit old by then. Maybe 2020, Whistling Straits in America with his profile might suit far better. Is that something you would go along with?
Well, I've got to be careful what I say here because I'm part of the process that's going to pick the next captain.
That's why I'm just trying to just put you down the road a little bit.
But you know where my alliance is and where my allegiance is. He was a terrific vice captain for me. And you know, there's not many guys brighter than Padraig or golf smart as Padraig is, and he gets people. It's one of the reasons, not just because he's a friend of mine, I had him as a vice captain, but I wanted people who could really, really read games and could read personalities, and as a vice captain, follow a game and give me some really good insights back to help me make the decisions. That's what the role I saw as the vice captains. They weren't there for the players, they were there for me to help me make decisions. And I chose very, very carefully who those vice captains would be for that reason. And Padraig was obviously one of those and gave me a great, great feedback, great insights. He worked very closely with Victor De Buisson on that week, you know, and Victor went on to play an unbelievable week. And a lot of that was Padraig. Padraig followed him. I had Padraig out with him in the practice rounds as well as all of Victor's games. And he was a big voice for me that week. And I've no doubt, you know, hopefully he'll go on to be Ryder Cup captain one day, and a good captain he'll be.
So is this a full-time gig for the next year then ahead of Lahinch?
Oh yeah, I'm taking this serious, Nathan. Yeah,
I have no
absolutely.
Doubt.
I mean, I really want to push the boat out. I'm very, very proud to be Irish. You know, the Olympics was an incredible experience for me. You know, I'd even put it higher than what I did in my Ryder Cup experiences. It made that much of an effect on me. It was incredible to be involved at an Irish level, and I see this as in a similar vein. You know, I'm showcasing not just golf in Ireland and Lahinch and the European Tour, but I'm showcasing Ireland, and you know, we're going to have it on the Golf Channel. We're going to be broadcast all over America. You know, golf is responsible for bringing millions of dollars and massive employment into the country of Ireland, and I think this is an opportunity for me to give something back for my country, give something back, showcase it, and hopefully get more of those dollars over to Ireland, more investment into Ireland, and more people coming over to experience golf. So I'm going to get involved in everything from setting up the golf course to the business side of it, to trying to raise some support, to local engagement with the local community, to schools and kids getting involved, to the tented village and bringing the town into the golf course and making it a festival and having the local GAA involved. I mean, I really want to push the bow down on as many levels as I can make this a very memorable Irish Open. And then when it comes to TV production, a little bit that I know about it now, having been involved in it, you know, I really want to showcase Ireland, you know, and I want to make sure we get the Cliffs of Moher in there. I want to make sure that we get the beaches in there, the sand dunes, and showcase other golf courses in the area too. This is not just about promoting the Hinch and the Irish Open, but it's promoting the southwest of Ireland. And Ireland is a country that this is a great place to come and spend your dollars and have a good time and play some great courses.
No better man for the job, Paul. Brilliant stuff. The official announcement today that the 2019 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is going to take place at Lahinch Golf Club in County Clare. Paul, best of luck over the next few weeks.
Pleasure. Thank you, Nathan.
There we are, Paul McGinley.
Wow.
What an interview. You really are great.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks. I'll try my hand at rugby next.
That market's taken.
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, I loosen things up a little bit on TV3. I'm going to crack a few jokes. Maybe just change the style a little bit. Wait, from what I understand, is what some people are really looking for.
It's what some people are looking for, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
McGinley, again, I think is going to ruin the Irish Open for Harrington, Clark and McDowell.
I know, it is like being the Ryder Cup captain post-McGinley.
So, he was saying there how he preferred being the Olympic captain to the Ryder Cup captain,
yeah,
that he took that even more seriously.
Genuinely and this, patriotic.
He properly steps up. You can tell, even listening to him, yes, I am now taking Lahinch and putting it out to the world,
yeah,
and I'm going to put everything on the line for the next year to make this as successful a tournament as possible. Forget about Portrush. Forget about everyone saying that the Open is going to be the big event. This is where you want to be.
And you just know he will do it. He's an incredibly impressive man. He is going to tick all the boxes.
He knows all the right people.
Attention to detail. Brilliant operator. And I mean that in a good sense. Like, he's a really good people person. And he'll pull in all sorts of favours. And you just know this thing is going to be innovative and good. And it's a great course. And if it gets the weather, it's going to be fantastic.
I think his brilliance is in being able to negotiate and call in favours of different types. So he can't do the Rory thing and ring up Sergio and say, "Will you come over? I'll play your tournament." Mm. But he can ring JP McManus and say, "Hey, if we ask Tiger to come, can he stay in Adair Manor for the week and we'll look after him and make him feel at home?" Yeah, 100%. Sure, whatever he wants. Does he need the private jet straight over and straight back after the tournament? Yeah, of course we can do that. Mm. So I would expect there'll be a
good field.
And we had him on about 3 months ago talking about this, and he was trying to figure out what his role would be in comparison to what Rory has done for the tournament. But something as obvious as, Well, I'm going to ring up the RNA. I'm going to ask them how they're laying out Port Rush 2 weeks later. We're going to have the same length rough. We're going to have the same speed greens. We're probably going to shape the course in a certain way that it's the perfect warm-up. It's playing Port Rush 2 weeks beforehand without taking away from Lahinch in its own right. Like, it's all smart stuff.
I know. It's simple and smart. The smartest stuff is often so simple. Like, really smart people make things look easy. Mm. A good football manager, that team just fits together and it looks easy. So I'm really excited. It's a great move. And you know, I was just saying to someone the other day, okay, it seems to go up north and then south every second year, and that's fine. And I know Killarney was a number of years ago now, but I think we do need to bring the Irish Open to places it doesn't usually go to, as much as we like the convenient Dublin type courses. There's great courses in Connacht. I think the West of Ireland really deserves an Irish Open soon. I would like that to be on the horizon for it.
Some Joe would say that Lahinch is in the West of Ireland.
Northwest Clare?
That is as West of Ireland as you get.
Yeah. I like Connacht, but I'm with you. But that's what I'm sort of saying. It's great to see it going in that direction so that the West of Ireland doesn't feel forgotten.
So go to Enniscrone or
something like that. Yeah. Now, I'm not enough of a golf expert to know if those courses are up to like this, that, to host a tournament. Mm. And, you know, Enniscrone's such a small village and the infrastructure you need and all that stuff.
Well, if you're a bit of Ballyliffin, I think anything is possible, Joe.
But I think it's great it's going to that part of the world as opposed to just always Dublin or around Dublin.
Well, it'll take over. Now, Lahinch isn't the biggest place, but they're used to having probably 25 stag and hen parties every weekend.
So
there's
type.
Hundreds of holiday homes and there's plenty of options for getting down there. And actually, there's a hell of a buzz. You can see it online already that people are genuinely excited about getting down to Lahinch because of the quality of the course. He was interesting on Rory and didn't really divulge a huge amount of what they were talking about at Adair Manor, but how Rory needs to maybe learn to appreciate the challenge of different types of courses. So the players, Sawgrass doesn't suit Rory's eye, doesn't really feel Wentworth. The new Wentworth, even though Rory's won there, will really suit his eye either. But that actually maybe mentally needs to look at it in a different way of, how do I conquer this golf course rather than, well, this course just doesn't fit my eye.
Yeah, see it as a fun challenge almost.
Exactly.
So
said, Tiger at Hoylake, just leave the driver in the bag.
Yeah. He didn't hit one bunker in Hoylake all 4 days. Plenty of bunkers there. So looking back on the players then, I mean, McGinley is impressed with Tiger, as we all were. He started Sunday 11 off the lead. He reached the turn in 32, then had birdies at 11 and 12. He was suddenly within four. It was amazing. It was exhilarating. We all lost our minds. This was as impressive as Tiger has been on his comeback. But he said himself on the Sunday, God, yeah, everything was pretty good here. I'm very close to winning.
There is still that one question mark, though. If he was one shot behind rather than four shots behind, would he have produced the same type of shot? So McGinley touched on that. Was it at the Valspar where he got within one and then he hit this horrible hook and it all just fell apart very quickly? McGinley thinks that once he gets his distance control right, that he was going for pins, he was taking the risks, he was able to hit the shots. There was still maybe that tiny 1% of rustiness. But still, it's exciting. Mm. And it still feels as though there is an extra level. It still feels like he's playing well, but that if he's 1 week, imagine what one win
might do for
at
him.
Any tournament does for him. Maybe he just goes, all the doubts are vanished instantly.
Yeah. I do, I mean, for all the critiquing I've done of him through the book mainly, I'm just retelling the worst stories, I suppose. And the book obviously focuses more on the negative. That's kind of how these things work. I do get the impression he's genuinely enjoying this second act and the popularity that he still has out there. People are like just mind blown when they see him. And I think he genuinely is enjoying the fact that actually, God, everyone doesn't hate me. I mean, I went through some weird stuff.
People want me to win.
Yeah, I think he's enjoying it. Rory didn't do much. Course doesn't suit him.
No, missed the cut. It was dullish aside from Tiger, just because Webb Simpson.
I thought it was very intriguing around the time Tiger was on his charge, and Webb Simpson shot a 73, so he didn't have his best stuff on the Sunday, to say the least. He was hanging on in there. It's obviously very, very tough to win with the lead. At one point I text the WhatsApp group and I said he's cracking. I said he's so close to cracking here. In fairness to him, he did really well.
First in strokes gained putting, first in driving accuracy, third in strokes gained around the green, the shortest hitter in the field for the entire week.
That's the kind of course that suits him.
It's been coming as well. He's definitely had an improvement, particularly in his putting over the last sort of 3-4 months.
Well, what are we making of this business now where they're they're clearly anchoring.
The sort of Langer style, sort of pushing the rules as close as you can to the limit.
Mm.
If it's within the rules, it's within the rules. Have you seen some of Tiger's stats? So he's inside the top 10 on tour this season in strokes gained total, and even his world ranking. So he's slowly moving closer to the world's top 50.
Yeah.
But if it was just on this year, he'd be almost in the top 10.
Yeah.
Like, he's that level of high quality consistency. Clubhead speed, putting from 3 feet, strokes gained around the green, round three. Clubhead speed on average 121.6.
Wow.
Putting from 15 to 20 feet, holding 30% of them, scrambling from the rough. So it is just probably those few doubts off the tee. But again, the viewing figures at the weekend were off the scale.
He was very good off the tee a lot as well. Some of his drives were just fantastic.
He was hitting the stinger.
Yeah. Did you see the one, the PGA Tour tweeted, it's gone viral.
But he hit it again on the final
stinger.
Day.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Some of the shots he hits, even at one point, I think it was McGinley on commentary, and he just said, like, that's just perfection from Woods. You know, it was just like, oh, like Webb Simpson just can't hit that shot in his dreams with this kind of weird, ugly swing.
And it was brilliant watching himself and Spieth together.
Yeah.
And Tiger's playing better golf than Jordan Spieth. Spieth's playing brilliant golf, except he can't bloody putt.
I don't know. It's starting to, I mean, he's now, definitely human.
He is. And he's not quite, Rory's probably statistically a better putter than him this year. He's playing so well, all he needs is a half-decent week on the greens and he's going to win a tournament.
Mm.
But he can't seem to find that at the moment.
No, slightly strange. He's playing this week, so they're at Trinity Forest Golf Club in Dallas, Texas, designed by Ben Crenshaw. First time they've done the AT&T at this golf course. No trees at the Trinity Forest Golf Club. I'm not sure why it's called that, but it is. Undulating greens and runoffs, I'm told, which make your iron play very important. The short game is key. Billy Horschel, obviously, is the defending champion. Seamus Power is playing. Padraig Harrington is playing. Greg McDowell is playing. And Spieth is there, obviously. Interestingly, Spieth was saying, when I play in Texas, I never have a beer or two, even on the Tuesday, because I get dehydrated so easily. No steaks, no beers. I don't know.
That is interesting. Was that the highlight of his press conference?
Yeah, it was kind of up there. And then on the European Tour, we have the Belgian knockout, no less. So it seems Niall Horan.
Go on, Joe. Explain the Belgian knockout to
us. Well, I can. Niall Horan, it seems. Thomas Peters has revealed he took inspiration from One Direction's Niall Horan with regard to the format for this week's inaugural Belgian knockout in Antwerp. So Thomas Peters is the favourite, 18-1. Jorge Campillo is the second favourite on 22-1. Nicholas Kosar's there. It's not a great field, I won't lie. The format, if you're interested, is 2 days. First 2 days, stroke play. So just your standard stroke play for the first 2 days. That will establish a top 64.
Mm.
And then we're into 9-hole matches under a hybrid stroke play match play format over the weekend. Don't ask me what the hybrid of the stroke play match play is.
I shouldn't really be going with, I think the first 3 rounds are stroke play and the last 3 rounds are match play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just keep reading then. Three rounds of knockout matches under stroke play rules take place on Saturday, and then on Sunday there's quarterfinals, semifinals and final. Peter said, I've played a lot of match play when I was young. I loved it. I still love it. There we go. See how it goes. And then one strange one to finish was the Lucas Glover story.
Yeah, this was slightly bizarre, and one of those that sort of seems funny when you read it first and then realise, whoa, this is actually a little bit more serious than you would have.
When did this
have
seem
suspected.
Funny when you first read it?
Well, I didn't see who it was, or it was, oh, wife attacks golfer after a terrible round of golf. I'm like, right. God, she really lost it. So Lucas Glover, a former US Open champion, was allegedly attacked by his wife after playing badly at the Players' Championship last week.
Yeah.
Krista Glover
was
arrested after a row in their house at Pontevedra Beach. She was charged with domestic battery and resisting arrest. If found guilty, she could face 1 year in jail on each misdemeanor count. According to an incident report, Lucas Glover tried to ensure that deputies wouldn't arrest his wife of 6 years by changing his witness statement. But because both Glover and his mother suffered visible but minor injuries in the altercation, Krista Glover was taken to the local jail in handcuffs.
Yeah, shocking stuff. report as well said that there definitely was an argument after the he missed the cut with the 78, and his mother tried to intervene, and Krista Glover began attacking her. Arresting officer noticed cuts and blood on the arms and clothing of Glover's mother. So Glover went on Twitter and said there was an altercation, everyone's fine. Won't say too much more about it, I guess. We're sort of rubbernecking.
I just thought some of the stories were interesting because it goes, and since he had a bad day alongside Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson and Justin Rose. So this was in a British publication. It's, how can we get Tiger, Dustin and Justin into the search bar?
Right.
I don't think Tiger had a bad day on Saturday.
No. Strange. I know. Well, hopefully they sort it out. Before we finish up, we're going to keep the instruction tips coming. So Brian Boschel had us out at the Pels Academy a couple of weeks ago and brought us through various aspects of the short game. We played the bunker last week. One or two people tweeted saying they found the low hands at address.
Oh, yeah.
A really good tip. I can confirm it is. So here is Brian on just your standard edge of the green. It's the shot most of us mid-handicap types are going to have to play a lot, where we get it up in and around the green and then our score will be dictated a lot of the time by what are we going to do then. So here's how to chip it close.
We're here at the Dave Pels Academy at Killeen Castle, as you know, on Golf Weekly, the Golf Weekly podcast. We're continuing our instruction section. We have Brian Boschel here taking us through various aspects of the short game. So, Brian, we're coming to the easy one. This is the
money maker.
Well, this is pretty easy in many ways. Though there is an interesting point you made whereby this really is where people can massively improve their short games, as opposed to putting. Like, you had a great stat that from outside 10 feet or something on the PGA Tour, the stats are not as good as we all think.
No, it's very surprising. So when we look at chipping, it's the one shot that can really improve your putting.
Yeah.
And people often look at us as if we have five heads when we say that to them, because if you can chip it close enough, you're going to hold a lot more putts. So what we would do is, if you can get the ball inside 3 feet, your conversion rate with the putter is above 90%, so you're going to hold a lot of putts.
Yeah.
Outside of 6 feet, it's below 50%.
So outside of 6 feet for amateurs?
For amateur golfers.
It's 50%.
Just over 7 feet for a tour player. One of the key ingredients when it comes to a chip shot is we want to land the ball early on the green and we want to let it release to the hole. So a lot of people get the issue, they look at the flag as their target. So one of the things that leads to is quite big backswings.
Yeah.
So when people make big backswings, the tendency then on the follow through is, you know, the ball's going to go too far, so we stop. So our target in terms of swing length is where we actually want the ball to land, which is only a couple of feet on the green. And then in terms of club choice, I've got an 8-iron here in my hand. If we land the ball early on the green, it will roll to the flag. So the choice of loft is more to do with controlling the distance of the shot than anything else. To become good at chipping, one of the key ingredients is we have to hit down on the golf ball. So a lot of people will understand the idea the ball does need to be back in the stance to hit down to produce a low running shot. But what a lot of people misunderstand is their body position. So we'd see a lot of students put the ball back, but then lean back with their upper body, which causes either sticking the club in the ground or try and stop the club hitting the ground and hitting a thin shot.
Okay.
So what we want to really give you is a kind of a blueprint to follow to get you into a good setup position. So we always start off with the ball in the middle of the right foot, about a grip length from the golf ball. So we're standing relatively close to the golf ball. We bring the front foot in. So what we have here is an alignment aid to make sure we're square to our target. Width of stance, about a club head width. Slight flare with the two toes. The reason we're flaring the two toes is just to help us rotate the body through the shot again. What we're looking for is a nice tall upright posture, not way down the grip and getting down here, because it restricts our body rotation. So we're standing nice and tall. And then to get good contact, we want to ensure that our center and our head are ahead of the golf ball. So I rotate back, I rotate through, and just let the ball work down the green.
So great stuff there from Brian Boschel. All of those videos are up on our Facebook page as well. The overriding thing I took from that whole day, and it's again, it's one of these things that from reading magazines and just thinking about golf anyway, that intellectually you know, and therefore you feel you're doing it, is... And he said it's true of basically everyone who comes to him, even though they say the right things and they say, oh, what you do is, everyone when they're chipping just let their hands go and stop moving their body. So he's saying, you can't emphasize enough for all of these shots, even for a flop shot, which I found hard to believe, but just take the hands out of it, and it really is just turn and turn. Like, everyone just stops and just lets the hands go. Just
get the shoulders moving.
Just, yeah, exactly. Shoulder, turn, and shoulder, turn. And it's just, like, even to the point, get your right heel off the ground. Like, really turn. And you just get this lovely soft contact. We're not turning properly. We're not turning to face the target. And it ran through most of the lessons he was giving us for any variety of shots. And I was sort of saying, God, I just thought I turned. You know, you just know you turn. Mm. And maybe sometimes you do, but it's not to the forefront. You're thinking more of your hands.
That's the problem. Because yeah. I watched some of the videos before I went up to Ballyliffin about my short game. And it was the one thing when I was around the greens was, all right, get my shoulders moving and forget about my hands.
Yeah.
Yet every time I hit a bad shot, it was because I was looking at the lie,
yeah.
thinking about how am I going to connect with the ball. And I realized I didn't move my upper body at all. Yeah. I was just moving my hands.
The best exponent is Jason Day. If you just YouTube Jason Day right now, he is dead-handed. So just such dead hands, and it's just shoulder, shoulder. And as Butch Harmon was saying just over the weekend, he's like the best chipper around. Contact is always so good. So it's really worth trying messing around with. Just if you can, dead arms, dead arms, dead arms. Take your wrists and hands out of it. I promise you, it'll be a billion times better. So we'll bring you more tips from Brian Boschel. It's a short and sweet Golf Weekly this week. We'll get Fionn back in the mix next week.
We've a very important Tiger. Meeting to go to about our Irish Open coverage.
Yeah.
So if people would like to do our job for us as usual and send us ideas of what we should do over the week up at Ballyliffin, that'd be just great.
Mm, okay.
As long as it doesn't involve us getting out of bed too early.
No extra work. Well done to you for interviewing Paul McGinley. You saved the podcast this week. It's a low wattage podcast this week, not our greatest work. But next week we will have the author of that Tiger Woods book, and I guess we'll all chat a bit about it as well, so that'll be a bit of fun and whatever else is going on. That is us for another week.
Wentworth.
Is it?
Next week.
Wow. We're in a sweet spot in the season. Okay, Wentworth, fantastic. Well, we'll be over to the course there. Maybe Nick Dye or someone might be there, and we can check in. So we'll do that next week, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck. All my exes, where